Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. You know the drill when you go in for a regular medical checkup, blood pressure checked, heart rate, your weight, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But does your doctor often ask you, what do you do for exercise? If she doesn't, she might soon. Well, here to tell us more about why is Carrie Goldberg, co-host of WBUR's Common Health blog. Hi there, Carrie.
Hey, Meghna.
So I actually thought that doctors already did talk about exercise a lot with patients.
Yes, they very often do. And also, we all already know that exercise is good for us. But all of this is rising to this, like, whole new level. A top medical journal, the Journal of the American Medical Association, is running a call to action to doctors. And it's saying that exercise is so good for us. It's so important for our health that it should actually be considered a vital sign, like your blood pressure, your weight, or your temperature. Actually, I don't think your weight is your temperature. And doctors should, and what that means is that doctors should check it at every appointment. So here's Dr. Joanne Manson. She's the chief of preventive medicine of Brigham and Women's Hospital. She's really a national leader in preventive medicine, and she co-authored this new call to action.
There's extensive research that physical activity can reduce the risk of heart disease, stroke, diabetes, cancer, osteoporosis, cognitive decline, even depression, at minimal cost and virtually no risks or side effects. And if a single pill could simultaneously do all of these things, everyone would be clamoring for it. And physicians and healthcare providers would even be taking it themselves.
I just wish exercise were a pill.
You called it the magic pill,
right? It's the closest thing we have to a magic pill. And the idea here is that doctors should not just measure your exercise, but they should actually prescribe it.
Like a prescription, like on a pad?
Yeah, like why not? I've actually seen sample prescriptions that go like, RX, moderate physical activity, 30 minutes daily, at least 5 times a week, resistance training twice per week. Like, there it is in writing.
Okay, so there's that whole white coat thing. Does it carry special power when your doctor prescribes you exercise?
I do think it has special power, and that's what the research shows. Although Dr. Manson from Brigham and Women says only about 1/3 of American adults report that their doctors do counsel them about physical activity.
Okay, so that's interesting. Even though, as we said earlier, there actually has been a push for some time now for more exercise and for doctors to talk about it.
Yes, there has been quite a push for a while. There's what's called lifestyle medicine, which highlights the huge proportion of chronic illness that arises from lifestyle choices like smoking or inactivity. There's even a movement called Exercise is Medicine.
Ah, one of those lovely self-explanatory names.
Doesn't need explaining. Here in Boston, Dr. Eddie Phillips, he's the director of the Institute of Lifestyle Medicine at Harvard Medical School, has been pushing in this direction for years, in part through the medical education system.
We're trying to get doctors at all levels of training, medical school, in their residency, the graduate level, and then in practice to learn these simple skills, which is how to assess how active someone is and then how to prescribe exercise. There's a lot of studies that show that the more active the doctor is, the more they're going to convincingly talk to their patients about their activity.
So the doctor has to walk the walk, not just talk the talk. So Dr. Phillips, he says he really does welcome this new call to action because this journal is really very high impact. And by the way, Meghna, in this new era of like Fitbits and other trackers, doctors increasingly can enlist technology to fight this good fight. So among other studies, The Globe today reports on a study that found that patients were much likely to exercise if their doctor sent them automated texts.
Yes,
to encourage them. So they would wear these fitness trackers, and they'd get smart texts like, good job, Meghna, you're on track to hit your goal of 10,000 steps today.
Or in the case of my life, Meghna, you haven't moved all day.
You seem to be slacking today. I actually think they keep it positive with these texts. And the main thing is that more than 80% of the patients who got these texts fulfilled their daily fitness goals, compared to just 44% of a control group of patients who did not.
Okay, so actual evidence that it makes a difference.
It may, yeah.
Okay, so maybe we'll be seeing doctors prescribe exercise as actual medicine.
Yep.
Well, you can read a topic, or you can read more about this, by the way, in a post on Common Health by Carrie's Common Health co-host Rachel Zimmerman. You can find a link to it at radioboston.org. Carrie Goldberg, co-host of WBR's Common Health blog, thank you as always.
I'm going to send you nagging texts now, Meghna.
We're going to end with Billy Porter. He's the Tony and Grammy Award-winning star of the hit Broadway musical Kinky Boots. The musical tells the story of Charlie Prince, a struggling shoe factory owner, and Porter plays Lola, the fabulous cabaret star who comes to Charlie's rescue.
You don't want to see me anymore. You can't listen to me, laugh out loud. You don't want to see me dance. You can't even take the chance that it might reflect on you.
This archetype did not exist in this way on Broadway until me, and until this show.
And critics have said it couldn't have existed without Porter. In many ways, he is Lola. Black, gay, a supremely talented artist who grew up always hearing that he was an anomaly, that something about him was wrong.
You know, from the earliest time I could remember, you can't be that, you can't do that, you're too black, you're too gay, you're too gospel, you're too that, you can't do, no, you'll never make it. You have to fix yourself. You have to fix it. And I understood that I was not broken.
It sounds so heartless, so cruel to say that to a child, but Billy Porter did hear those words a lot growing up. However, he also knew he was not broken. We spoke with Porter when he was in Boston earlier this year to direct the Huntington Theatre Company's production of The Colored Museum, George C. Wolfe's classic, cutting satire of the African-American diaspora. Porter was directing The Colored Museum earlier this year. It happens to be the same play that changed Billy Porter's life when it debuted in 1986.
I was a little black gay boy in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and I was looking at colleges, and my drama teacher handed me the play and said, this is a very important play for you, and you might find something in it. And so as I was reading it, it just cracked open this sense of camaraderie, this sense of somebody actually has put into words what I've been feeling.
Which was...
Where do I fit?
Because you grew up in Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. and you were open about your sexuality?
Yeah, I mean, as open as you could be in 1985.
Right.
You know, during the AIDS crisis, you know, in the Pentecostal church, yeah, I was open as I could. But, you know, like, I knew instinctively, even if I didn't have the language for it, that this thing that was different wasn't something that could really be changed. You know, I went through the process of trying to change it early on.
You went through that process, something you did to yourself or by virtue of...
Both.
The church?
Both. I mean, it was just what you did. You know, I was 5 years old.
Yeah.
In a house full of women. And, you know, you're born with this. So I was a little sissy and they were nervous about that. So they sent me to a psychologist to get that out of me at five. You know, so there's no bad blood about it. It's like, it's what you did. It's the only thing that we knew. It was very early that I realized that there was something different about me and it was wrong.
Well,
and you got to fix it.
You were told.
That was the messaging. By the time I reached 14, it was like, well, I've tried to do that change all these years and that ain't working. Because I still like boys, so forget it. You know, I'm just going to try to figure out how to be who I am in the best way possible.
which is why the Colored Museum spoke so powerfully to Porter when he first read it. Here was a play that, according to one critic, celebrates, satirizes, and subverts the African-American legacy. Playwright George C. Wolfe created 11 exhibits, themes, really, in black culture. For example, in an exhibit called Get On Board, a flight attendant welcomes the audience aboard a celebrity slave ship. Passengers are asked to obey the fasten shackles sign and told not to rebel. And in Cooking with Aunt Ethel, a character called Mammy Aunt Ethel sings a recipe on how to bake yourself a batch of Negroes. No surprise, then, that theater critic Frank Rich wrote with admiration that, quote, George C. Wolfe says the unthinkable, says it with uncompromising wit, and leaves the audience, as well as sacred targets, in ruins. Billy Porter agrees, particularly when it comes to a sketch called The Gospel According to Miss Raj. She's a black drag queen who, in her own words, is trying to escape a whole race of people being trashed and debased.
It was the first time that I had ever seen even the acknowledgement of a black gay character that wasn't the butt of the joke, that wasn't reviled, you know, who actually was in a position of power.
I mean, because I was really taken by a quote that I read from another interview that you did, and you said, when who you are naturally is not only considered a sin, but you're reviled for being that human being, and you don't have any control over it, there are a lot of issues that come into play. And then you said, and it takes a lot of presence, determination, courage, and space to figure out how to land in that truth.
Mm-hmm. So, I said that?
Yeah, you did.
That sounds real smart.
So how did you land in your truth?
I'm still landing. You know, like I said, I really tried to pray the gay away. I really tried to not be this. And it was destroying me. I know I was saved by my connection to my creativity and that space. You know, I was given that gift.
As a young adult, Billy Porter took that gift to New York. He got some work in Miss Saigon, Grease, and Five Guys Named Mo, amongst others. And Porter says from the moment he first stepped foot on Broadway, he wanted to meet George C. Wolfe.
And he took over the Public Theater, and I just, you know, spent my entire career trying to get in his space so that I could just soak up everything. I'm like, I just want to be in the room so I can learn everything from this brilliant mind. There were other pieces that then emerged from his mind.
Yeah.
Jelly's Last Jam, for instance. You know, tap in Jelly's Last Jam was the metaphor for jazz music. And so imagine I'm around the corner doing Five Guys Named Mo.
Yep.
Which is what I call the Millennium Coon Show. Tapping for the white folks like you're supposed to do.
The only job that's open needs a man with a knack, so put it right back on the rack. Jack, choo choo, choo choo, chibuga, woo woo, woo woo, chibuga, choo choo, choo choo, chibuga, take me right back to the track, Jack.
And then I go around the corner, and all of a sudden I see this different thing.
Door slam. Door slam.
You step on someone's feet. And you don't eat.
And it was like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. And I have to say, and this is what the Colored Museum is about. I have to say, I was sitting in the orchestra. And in front of me was a couple. And at intermission, I heard the woman say, oh, I sort of like it. I just wish they would just dance.
Oh, dear.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what the Colored Museum addresses. You know? That uncomfortable conversation that nobody actually really wants to have.
After those early Broadway appearances, Porter struggled. He went 13 years without significant work. But he did get in the room with George C. Wolfe. The playwright went on to become one of Billy Porter's most important mentors. Well, I want to talk for a second about what Wolf says about you, right? Because he...
I don't know what he says about me.
Well, I mean, he basically says that what you've done with your career is that he's crafted his own career. And as a result, he, meaning you, grew as an artist and a person. What do you think about that?
You know, it's so... I always say it's easy to be who you are when what you are is what's popular. And I fought long and hard, you know, to craft a version of a life that was based inside of a truth. And I took all of the hits that come along with that for years and years. There was nothing for me to do. I'm talking no place to live, bankruptcy, no job, nothing. And I, in that moment and in that time, really fought to excavate a different kind of creativity for myself that didn't require anybody's validation on the outside.
Billy, do you mind if I just say that seeing how you're reacting to just me reading these words from Wolf right now, it's reminding me of the power of performance and art to save, as you said, to transform, to change. And it makes me wonder then, what does it mean to you now then to be directing?
Well, that's why I get so full, because, you know, he really is a mentor. So to then, all these years later, sort of pass the torch to me is really humbling and really, I'm speechless when it comes to that, because it really is so important, and I don't take it for granted at all, mm-hmm. at all.
Well, what about producing the Colored Museum in 2015?
Mm-hmm.
Who is it for today?
It's for everybody. Okay. You know, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Mm. While we have come very far, we are still very much in the same place. The difference is the racism and the discrimination is now politically incorrect to say out loud.
Well, because it's interesting, because we were looking at a 1986 review of the Colored Museum in the New York Times, which basically said that Mr. Wolf is the kind of satirist almost unheard of in today's timid theater. This is 86, mm-hmm. who takes no prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think theater is still like that, or is Wolf still sort of one of the few take no prisoners?
He's one of the few, and now thankfully, as a result of him, his influence on me, I think I am too. I hope I am as well. I think that the lesson that I've learned is you have to change the tape in your own head that says your stories are not valid. That's changing. It really is changing very, very much in television, which I think is really explosive and challenging and exciting to see. You know, exciting to see. It's like, when was the last time you saw, you know, three black women starring in network primetime television shows and killing every single second of it, and all the white people are watching?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
He's talking about the television shows Scandal, How to Get Away with Murder, and Empire. Three shows that Porter says are in the tradition of the Colored Museum, satirizing and celebrating the African-American legacy.
You know, that's the energy that I want to keep putting out into the world. You know, not talking about what is wrong with it, but just being a part of the solution.
Billy Porter, He's a Tony and Grammy winner, and we talked with him last spring when he was in town directing George C. Wolfe's The Colored Museum at the Huntington Theater Company. Porter will be back on Broadway next year in Shuffle Along, a new production that'll be directed by George C. Wolfe. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.